Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Segment of Americans were enslaved. People who built America yet had few rights. It wasn't until 1863 that a president stepped forward, albeit reluctantly, to set matters right via the Emancipation Proclamation. That president was Abraham Lincoln. The Emancipation Proclamation was an order issued to all segments of the executive branch, including the Army and Navy of the United States, by President Lincoln on January 1, 1863, during the American Civil War. It proclaimed all those enslaved in Confederate territory to be forever free, and ordered the Army and all segments of the executive branch to treat as free all those enslaved in 10 states that were still in rebellion, thus applying to 3.1 million of the 4 million slaves in the United States. Although it wasn't until June 19, 1865, 1865 that the remaining slaves were freed. In celebration of that event, I have as my guest today Reverend Dennis Dillon, who hopefully will visit us very soon. But Reverend Dillon is the pastor of the Brooklyn Christian Center and publisher of the Christian Times, and he's here to talk about the upcoming Freedom 2013 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. It's an event that will commemorate this historic moment with a timelined exhibition tracing the journey from Africa through slavery leading up to the emancipation and from the emancipation to present time. There will also be, an Emancipation Awards luncheon honoring those unsung heroes and she-heroes, some posthumously, and also honoring institutions that have played a significant role towards the passage of the signing of the Emancipation, as well as those who contributed towards the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The invitational event will also recognize individuals, organizations, and corporations that continue to keep the flames of freedom alive. The celebration will take place Wednesday, June 19th at the Riverside Baptist Church located at 490 Riverside Drive in Harlem in New York. This will also include a job fair, workshops, wealth empowerment events, a rally, and a live concert featuring gospel singer Tamela Mann, who, by the way, who opened the show singing Trouble in My Way, Jesus Will Fix It. Well, Reverend Dennis Dillon has a background as an editor of a Northern New Jersey newspaper. He's a journalist, pastor, urban strategist, and community developer. He has been instrumental in negotiating with corporations and banking institutions, convincing them to reinvest hundreds of millions into underserved communities. He is the co-founder of the Greater New York Chamber of Commerce and chairman of the Economic Literary Coalition. He is executive producer and host of Easter in New York, which is an annual TV special. He formerly co-produced and aired on Fox 5. He has hosted many TV and radio shows and is a former reporter and news correspondent who has written for a number of news publications and magazines, including the New York Daily News and Gospel Today. He's also a chief researcher and author of the annual report on the economics, on the economic state of Black New York. Well, Reverend Dennis Dillon is our guest today, but he has not shown up. And that is a sad state of affairs. So I'm going to have to reach out to his PR and see what's holding him up. But in the meantime, let's put on another song by Tamela, which is entitled, you know what? I think what I played earlier, sorry, was Heaven, the love song. And the one I'm going to play now is Trouble in My Way, Jesus Will Fix It. Here we go.
Trouble in my way. I have to cry sometimes.
He knows just what to do. Can he fix it?
He fixed it for you.
Can he fix it?
Yeah.
When is she pausing my dog? Can he fix it?
Well, Reverend Dennis Dillon has joined us, so why don't we welcome him to the show? How are you, Reverend Dillon? Reverend Dillon?
Yes, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, it is certainly a pleasure joining you and being with you, and I just give God praise for the tremendous work that you are doing, and certainly want to encourage you to keep it up.
Thank you, and I can say the same for you.
Thank you.
So you started off as a New Jerseyite, but I see that you have transformed into a Brooklynite.
Well, I tell you, I am not sure if I would use the term transformation. I will not give up my New Jersey roots, not for anything, but I probably want to believe that I have reformed into a Brooklynite, because I am still to some extent committed and certainly love New Jersey.
Well, I see publishing and God was in your spirit early on, so tell me about your background in both journalism and ministry.
Well, I tell you, it's been a journey for me. My passion has always been to communicate, and whether it is through the, I call it the pulpit or the press, the mission and the mandate for me is just to share information. I have worked for many years as a journalist. I've worked with the what is now the Jersey Record, when it used to be the Bergen Record many years ago in Hackensack, New Jersey. And I have worked as the publisher for two New Jersey Bergen County publications many years ago, one of them being the Torchbearer and the other being the Bergen Sun. And these were publications that served the African-American community in the county of Bergen. So I'm excited about that. My passion has always been to share the good news, and so whether it is through print or through the airwaves, radio and television, or it is through the pulpit, my mission has always been, how do we really get people to understand the mission and the mandate that is before them, to maximize their potential and to certainly unfold all the power that God has installed in them?
Well, that says a mouthful, and how does one go about doing that? But we'll start off by talking about the Emancipation Proclamation. Although it was established on January 1st, 1863, the proclamation was limited in some sense, as it applied only to the states that had seceded from the Union. So I think slavery existed only in some cases for the loyal border states, and some of the Confederacy was exempted that was also under the Northern control. So freedoms only existed in the Union who won the war, if they won the war. In fact, if the Union hadn't won the war, wonder where we would be today.
Well, I tell you, the more I study, and I think this is a good year for everyone to probably do some research and some studies about the whole journey to emancipation, looking at the Civil War, looking at the Confederacy in the South, looking at the Union movement and activities in the North, looking at the Democrats, of course, back then largely in the South, and the Republicans in the North. It's just interesting, but I think you're absolutely right. In the end, what does the Emancipation Proclamation really mean? We know that the Emancipation Proclamation was signed January 1st, 1863, by President Abraham Lincoln, we do realize that there are many, many opinions and understanding as to what that meant and what that did for us. We're simply saying that in the end, this was obviously a great step in the journey towards the freeing of the slaves who were yet slaves in America. And 150 years later, we really need to look at what progress has been made and what it is that we need to do to ensure that it is not just a perception of freedom, but it is indeed a reality for all Americans, and particularly for the great-grandchildren of the slaves.
Well, I think, and this is my opinion, that slavery, although physically unchained, there is such a thing as mental slavery, and that has to be overcome still, and social slavery, that has to be overcome still, since there is still profiling and economic differences where black people are, and people of color, not just black people, most people are still on the bottom economically.
Yeah, and I think for me that is the big battle that we must move to fight. Our concern and our sense is simply this, and I like what you shared about mental slavery, because one of the musical icon that I really love and appreciate very much in terms of his music, and as I oftentimes say, his ministry, and that is Bob Marley, who said we must emancipate ourselves from mental slavery, for none but ourselves can free our minds. And the amazing thing about this is that it was Bob Marley's very last recorded music. He chose quite deliberately to do this without any major instrumentation, without the drums and the synthesizers and without the keyboards and the percussions and all of that stuff. And simply with his acoustics guitar, he gave the splendid song, Emancipate Yourself from Mental Slavery, for none but ourselves can free our minds. As we talk about slavery in the context of 2013, we have to obviously look at where we are in America today. We have to look at the fact that if you look at foreclosure in America, you will find that where there is stability within communities like the Caucasian community, there is a 7% drop in black home ownership in the United States of America, according to the numbers that came out last year. When we talk about stop and frisk in places like New York City, when we talk about profiling, as you mentioned, when we talk about where we are with the immigration reform activities that are taking place in Washington as we speak, we talk about underwater mortgages, we talk about, you know, economic justice, and we look at the fact that despite the fact that blacks in New York, as an example, are responsible for some $87 billion in deposits in the six largest banks in New York tri-state area, yet blacks do not receive loans. Less than 2% of the SBA loans, for instance, last year went to black-owned business, measured against a population of 19% in the state of New York. So we're seeing that there are still great disparity, and in the end we gotta begin to close this gap, because my firm belief is in the absence of true economic freedom, there is really no true freedom.
I agree, but at some point we are making enough money that we must invest in ourselves. I think those that keep looking towards black white people to help them, white people are helping each other. And we need to help ourselves as well. That there's certainly enough of us that can invest our money in businesses and education and things like that. Do you agree or do you?
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's the conversation we're having. The whole concept behind the Emancipation Proclamation. That's why we're inviting and encouraging everyone to come on to Riverside Church on this coming Wednesday evening, because as we do this Emancipation Rally, what we're talking about is how do we, black folks in America, look at the $1.2 trillion in buying power that we represent across this country. If you were to take the 20 smallest states in the United States of America, and you combine the buying power of all of these 20 states, you will find that the black buying power in America is $100 billion more than all 20 states combined. So you're absolutely right. We do have the economic potency to create this. What needs to happen is the education, the transformation, and realizing that despite how we got down, we have to understand that we have the power to pick ourselves up. We have to grow beyond some of the problems from which we suffer. I talk about compulsive shopping disorder. It is a major problem that we have to begin to solve. Houselessness, another major problem that we have to look at. And government dependency syndrome. All of these are issues and ills that black folks in America, 150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, must really begin to overcome and know that, listen, we cannot continue to point fingers in the other direction. We have to obviously begin to do some inner stuff, some inside stuff, some internal stuff, so that we can create the kind of transformation that is necessary.
Exactly, because what do they say? United you stand, divided you fall.
Divided we fall. And I love the words of Jesus, because Jesus made a profound statement when he said to his disciples, and as a preacher, I want to, you know, just put this in this Christological perspective, and that is, he said, I would that you become one as I and the Father are one, because where there is oneness, where there is unity, there is obviously power, and there is the capacity to win and to create transformation.
Exactly. So why don't you tell me the plans that are going forward for the 150-year celebration, the Emancipation Proclamation?
Well, there are a couple of things that we are doing. We're committed to a number of processes. Obviously, the first is just to encourage everyone to come out Wednesday. We will be at the Riverside Church in Harlem. That is 490 Riverside Drive between West 120th and West 122nd Street. We're going to be there in the spirit of some of the great leaders we've had. It was at Riverside Church that Dr. Martin Luther King gave one of his greatest speeches, Where Do We Go From Here? Our theme is, the whole concept of why we must act now, and obviously what we must do. That day, just to put things in perspective, we want to address the issue of mortgage and foreclosure and underwater issues. We're inviting everybody, if you have a mortgage issue, if you have a foreclosure issue, if you have an underwater mortgage issue, we have invited all the banks to be there. We've invited Citibank, we've invited Chase, we've invited TD Bank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and all the major banks, so that if your bank is you've got issues, you want to come and talk directly with them around some of those issues. In addition to that, we believe that one of the problems that we have to solve is the issue of jobs and career options in our community. And so there will be not a traditional job fair, although hundreds of jobs will be offered and available. But we want folks to come. We're looking for career direction, looking to change direction. We have a number of scholarship foundations that will be coming, providing millions of dollars in scholarship for those who want to go to school, continue in school, those who are looking for some non-traditional ways to develop skills so that we could really build and create a greater level of skilled workers within the context of our community. And on
is this
day,
for people of all ages?
It is people of all ages, people of all races. Obviously, our commitment is really to get our community moving in a forward direction. But yes, this is the kind of career fear and job fear that is open to all people of all ages. And of course, that evening will be the Emancipation Rally that will start at 6:45. We have two great actors that will be coming. They are the star actors of the hit Tyler Perry show, Meet the Browns. Mm-hmm. So both Mr. Brown and his daughter will be there, of course.
Fabulous.
For those who don't know, Tamela Mann, who acts and plays the role of Mr. Brown's daughter, is a great gospel singer. She has a top gospel CD in the country now called Take Me to the King. She will be there. She will be ministering and performing. So it is going to be that kind of experience. But the other two elements that I want to quickly share is this. There will be in November, the last weekend, a call for blacks across this region to redirect their dollars to supporting and empowering black-owned businesses. So we're doing what we call Black Friday. The old concept of Black Friday, which is really designed, unfortunately, to get black people to spend their money so major corporations in America can be in the black, thus Black Friday, we're saying, why don't we, before we begin to spend our resources on all the other corporations and retailers across this country and in this tri-state area, we are organizing black businesses and we're directing blacks to begin to spend and redirect their support to encouraging and supporting black businesses. We believe that this Emancipation Year is a good time to do that. And, of course, we will be doing a major time of gathering consumers to come to the Jacob Javits Convention Center the last weekend in November and saying, before you shop anyplace else, shop in black businesses. And because there are not that many black vendors and retailers, we're obviously creating this floor, which will be a major day of black people coming and supporting black businesses.
I'm all for that. Now, what are some of the corporations that will be there hiring?
We have a list of corporations that will be in attendance and participating. There will be companies and corporations such as Cablevision, will be there, New York Life will be there, Macy's will be there, M&T Bank Capital One will be there. I'm trying to find a list of some of the others that will be there. There will be Career Institute that will be there, talking about career options and career opportunities. And, of course, there are quite a few other major corporations that will be there as well.
Now, you mentioned workshops. What kind?
The workshops that will be highlighted this year will be workshops about mortgage and foreclosures. We'll be talking about how we work our way through those situations. There will be workshops on small businesses, how to start your small business, how to grow and build small businesses. One of the workshops that I'm excited about is how to create a job instead of looking for one. So we'll be talking to folks about how to create jobs. The Illinois Institute of Technology, that is now managing a major scholarship that provides up to 7% tuition support and assistance to individuals going from a 2-year to a 4-year college. They will be there and participating, and that amazes me that they're coming all the way from Chicago to New York because they have all these scholarship resources that's available to support. In fact, they have a special college scholarship that provides scholarship for students in the Caribbean that are looking to come to the United States and study at colleges in the United States. And those are, I think, 100% scholarship. So they will be there We will certainly have a workshop that will be led by the great Dr. John Ray Youngblood, who have given us just so much across the country. One of the great black clergy leaders we have, if we remember the best-selling New York Times book, Up on This Rock, which was written about Dr. John Ray Youngblood's life. If you remember, those who can go back to the Nehemiah houses and many of the Nehemiah houses that were built in places like East New York and Brownsville, Dr. John Ray Youngblood will be there. And through this, we're going to obviously take a historic look on our journey. He will be joined by people like Dr. Leonard Jeffries, one of the great black historians that we have, and just a number of others that will certainly be there to participate in that session as well.
Now, what is this also part of the Way Forward, which is what, a business, church, and community conference?
Yeah, I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is an important area. As we talk about the way forward, there are four very specific agendas that we've laid out around this, because we want to make sure that as we journey into this year, it's not about just an event. And our goal is Juneteenth 2014. And for those who don't know, it was 18 months later, June 19th, 1864, that many of the slaves got the word that they were actually free. And so we're committed.
1865, actually.
Wow.
2 years later.
Thank you for that. 19th
is when you're doing the conference, which is Juneteenth as well.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. It is on Juneteenth. But the amazing thing is that next year, June, we plan to do a major march on the UN. And the concept of that is not a protest march, because oftentimes for us, you know, in protest, we're actually, you know, asking folks to do for us. This has to be a statement march for us, which is to challenge us to do for self. And as we do for self, those who embrace the move and the mission, who seek to form coalition with us, can certainly do so. So the four-phase Way Forward agenda is about business and economic development as one strategy, action and cultural impact as the second. The diasporial imperative for us is to ensure that we understand that we are in a global marketplace, and this movement for us must become a global movement. And of course, our commitment is to put in place a not-for-profit foundation and structure that will really help to give energy and will to the development of enterprises on the for-profit side, institutions and organizations on the not-for-profit side, and certainly to facilitate the development of a stronger economic infrastructure that will fuel the rise and the growth of our people, so that when we get to a bicentennial celebration in 2063, and most of us are no longer here. The new generation, the then generation, will be able to look back and be in a better place. When we reflect on this, let me just make this point very quickly. And we go back to the Jubilee celebration that took place in 1913. And men like Booker T. Washington and James Weldon Johnson, who during that stage and that milestone gave us the song Lift Every Voice and Sing. Their theme was essentially things are getting harder. And when we journey another 50 years to the centennial celebration, and we get to the organization by Bayard Rustin and A. Philip Randolph and you know, Wyatt T. Walker, Reverend Dr. Wyatt T. Walker, and others, and of course Dr. Martin Luther King. We the end result of that theme was I have a dream. We know that the whole concept there was job, peace, and justice, but we walk away from that march in Washington with I have a dream. Here we are with the sesquicentennial celebration, and in the end, there obviously must be a clear sense that this journey continues, and we want to make sure that we do not walk away from this period in our history without establishing a monument that is the end result of a movement.
I agree very much. Tell me, what is the Situation Room?
The Situation Room is the whole idea of, again, you know, creating a room at the Riverside Church on Wednesday, as we will do in November at the Jacob Javits Situation Center, as we plan to do at the major march on the world next year. The whole concept is to provide a room where members of our community can come and have their situations addressed. In this case, they have a mortgage issue, they can come and have it addressed. They have an unemployment issue, they can come and have it addressed. They're looking for new career direction, they can come and have it addressed. They're having a problem getting commercial loans, they can come and have it addressed. There are so many people in our community in New York who were denied loans and grants and support from FEMA, coming out of the superstorm Sandy we had in the New York region, they can come and have their situation addressed. So the whole idea of the Situation Room is to encourage everyone who have a situation that you need support with to come, and we're going to provide as much of the resources to address and solve those problems. And if we don't have individuals that are in that room to address the situation that day, we're going to take your information and we're most definitely going to get back to you.
Well, tell me, how has gentrification affected the black community?
I am so happy that you raised that, because the sad reality is that it would probably take me all of our time together and maybe several days to come just to address the global problem of gentrification. Oftentimes, we based on our contextual circumstances and our presence in New York and the United States, we probably see gentrification as a U.S. problem, as a Bedford-Stuyvesant problem, as a Harlem problem. The fact of the matter is Asians are taking over Africa. We're seeing this problem globally, but you know, at the end of the day, we are losing prime real estate that we've owned and operated. Most times our community and our people are being displaced and are making really bad decisions. And this is the biggest problem I find, that we're making poor financial decisions. We've bought brownstones in places like Clinton Hill and Harlem 30, 40 years ago for $20,000 and $18,000. And folks show up and offer us $400,000 and $500,000. And we think that they're doing us a favor. And we take those monies and run and find that those monies cannot buy a comparable property or a not-so-comparable property in some of the other suburban communities that we want to run to. And when we go buy those properties, we find that after purchasing them, those properties depreciate, only to look back to find that the property that we sold for $400,000 in Clinton Hill is now valued at $800,000 or $900,000 the day after we sold it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, it's another form of economic strangulation and the kind of economic rape that is perpetrated against our community and against our people. And these are things that we obviously have to begin to solve. We put out an annual report that is called the Economic State of Black New York. And in the Economic State of Black New York report, just to give an example, these are numbers that came from the New York City planning board. If we take communities such as Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, like I mentioned, there over the past 10 years, there has been a 720% increase in whites coming into that community. And the decreased numbers are not as high, but it is amazing that there's almost a comparable decrease in blacks leaving those communities. We look at Bedford-Stuyvesant, a 634% increase in the white population. And the list goes on. So it's a serious problem. It is a crisis, and certainly it's one of the issues that we need to address, and we're certainly committed to doing that as we journey forward.
Well, tell me about the luncheon for Unsung Heroes. Heroes.
This is also something that is really dear to my heart because I've obviously been black all my life, unapologetically. So, but I've also discovered that I have not gotten all the truth. And as we reflect upon the movement around the Emancipation Proclamation, I'm concerned that a lot of heroes, and I'm talking about, in many cases, you know, white heroes have not really been saluted the way they ought to be saluted. I reflect upon people like Louis Tappan. If we think of Tappan, New York, or Tappan Zee Bridge, we'll probably go back to the culture when Louis Tappan and his brother were very involved in the abolition movement. We go to John Brown. We go to one of the person that I just wrote about a couple of days ago, and that is Reverend Dr. Elijah Lovejoy, who in his standing up for the freedom of the press and his right to publish the injustices perpetrated against, you know, slaves and so forth. He was killed trying to prevent the burning of his printing plant, and his brother who came behind him, Congressman Owen Lovejoy, and how he fought his brother's cause all the way through his life. And we obviously reflect upon many of the other African-American freedom fighters. We go back to Oberlin College, one of the first institutions of higher learning to openly, you know, admit and accept blacks, and have received many threats in their efforts to do that. We reflect upon a publication called Message Magazine that grew out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and how men like, I think his name is John White, had to hide in publishing his magazine to educate blacks who had just become free. And the support that he had from men like John Kellogg's, who used to hide slaves in his basement, who eventually became the founder and pioneer with his brother Charles Kellogg's of Kellogg's Corn Flakes, from which we eventually get Post cereals. There are just so many men and women who fought these causes, and frankly, I've never read any of this or heard any of this coming from, whether it's the black leaders or schools or others who made the point that, wow, in addition to the Harriet Tubmans and the Sojourner Truth, that there were all these other freedom fighters who obviously were not black and played a tremendous role in helping to bring about the freedom of our people.
Well, we do hear about Mr. Brown, but hardly, you're right. I just got an education about Mr. Tappan and Coke because I was unaware of that. And so this has been quite the educational show. I appreciate that, too.
Mm-hmm. And if we go back, just if I may just speak, to Louis Tappan for a moment, and the whole concept of the mercantile exchange was founded by Louis Tappan. But Louis Tappan, a lawyer, was the one who took on the case of the Amistad ship that ended up in New York by that group of slaves who rebel against being brought to the United States, in this case illegally, because at this point the United States has already closed its borders on slaves being brought to its shores.
Absolutely. And also, people don't know, or I guess they do in some way, that there was a fugitive law where those that escaped up north were oftentimes brought back to their master, even though
yes.
they considered themselves mm-hmm. in a free state.
That is exactly correct, and much of that evolution grew out of a movement that started at Oberlin College.
To dispel that or turn that around? Because I know some of the Union soldiers would ignore that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And some, a lot of African Americans actually fought in the Civil War. Over 200,000, really, soldiers,
yeah,
black
that
soldiers,
is correct.
Fought in that war for their freedom.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And even then, some did not get the promise after the war.
But, absolutely.
We move forward as a people, and we are moving forward in this show because our time is nearly up. Is there any? Oh, I wanted to mention also that you're an author of Bitter Truth, and if Bitter Truth is better than Sweet Falsehood, and Affirm Your Purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, and a couple of the publications as well. Right now, we are working on a special publication. I really want to publish some of the stuff that we're talking about today, we're working on that publication, just dealing with the long and troubled path to the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and the role that many played. I am overwhelmed by the story of Box Brown. These are stories that we probably haven't heard that much about, but yes, Bitter Truth is Better Than Sweet Falsehood, one of my first publications, and Affirm Your Purpose. The whole concept for me is education. I am, again, a strong believer that he shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free, and my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And as much as the Bible talks about the fact that where there are no vision, or where there is no vision, the people perish, I make the profound statement, even more profound, that where there is a vision, the people prosper. And so we must redefine, we must reorganize. We can't spend all the time talking about what's wrong and what went wrong and what folks have done to us. We obviously have to roll up our sleeves. We got to pull ourselves up, and we got to begin to focus on what we must do and where we go from here. So the building of new businesses, creating new enterprises, the whole idea of looking at a simple issue of, and I talk about this, and it is also in one of the annual publications that I do that is called The Economic State of Black New York, looking at the old concept of remittances, looking at the fact that Nigerians and Friends of Nigeria remit to Nigeria some $13 billion in monies last year. Most time these monies go to these countries, and at the end of the day, it ends up being consumers' dollars. Jamaica is the second, believe it or not, as small as that little country is, Jamaica receive of any black, largely indigenous black country in the world, receive the second largest number of remittance dollars, not by percentage per capita, but actual dollars. Some $3.7 billion in remittance went to Jamaica last year, which represents the largest percentage of foreign exchange resources to that country, higher than tourism, higher than industry. And as much as that speaks well for Jamaicans and Friend of Jamaica remitting resources, it is not the formula that has been used by the Italians, by the Irish, by the Koreans, and by a host of others. Their formula is let's send money back to our homeland for manufacturing, for business, and let us buy products and services. Let us in America, you know, import those products here, and in the end, they are manufacturing back home. And what that does, it reduces the trade deficit in the indigenous countries that are doing the manufacturing and exporting, in this case, the products out. And when we begin to make this not just something that we view globally, but also locally, where in our local communities we understand that the resources ought to come in at a greater level than they are going out. And by resources, I mean the financial resource. We will begin to turn things around in our communities.
I agree. And again, I have to go back to our mental state of because I hear too many black people saying, it happened because I was black. As if something was wrong with being black. And we have to look at that. Why do you see something wrong with being black? It's you're kissed by the sun. It's the most beautiful color going on. You're the original man. We have to go back to read books like When the World Was Black that talks about who was the first man, what we did, who we are, and see ourselves with pride and not keep trying to copy a European way of being. We live in a country that's primarily European, and of course that is our culture too. But we have to look at the beauty within ourselves and get over that Willie Lynch syndrome that has made us self-hating. Because that's our biggest problem. If you self-hate, then no matter what we do, we are not going to be strong.
And if I may just add a critical point to this, we have to address... We got to grow beyond the inferiority complex.
Exactly, that's my point.
That creates this kind of thinking. Because at the end of the day, that is really what we suffer from. We suffer from a lack of belief that we are able and capable of doing more and being better. So here we are in many communities. It is estimated by many of the major journalistic outlets in the New York area that blacks earn at the same level and in some cases at a higher level than whites.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not earning less, but here we go again. We are, despite the fact that we are on par with our earning power in the state of New York, and these are obviously the kind of stuff that we probably have to take a keener look at, and as we review them, we'll probably begin to paint ourselves the right picture.
Exactly.
But here in the state of New York, when we look at household income, we find that in many ways and in many cases, our household income is almost the same, but our net worth is way, 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 way less.
Mm-hmm.
Nationally, the average median net worth of the average white household is $106,000. The average black household is
$5,700
is the median net worth of the average don't want to be redundant, of the black household, $5,500 versus $106,000 for the average white household.
That's a huge difference.
Well, the parity gap is major. When we turn to the wealth side of the equation, when we look at the representative side of the equation, as it relates to income, as it relates to population, as it relates to size, there is no major parity gap. When we look at the wealth side, the ownership side, that is where the gap comes in. And it's a huge disparity gap for which we can no longer claim racial inequality, or we can claim racial discrimination, or we can and I'm not negating the fact that those things do exist. I am certainly trying to make the point to us that we must grow from this concept and this mindset in knowing that as much as years ago, and that's why we're inviting everybody, you got to come to Riverside Church on this coming Wednesday. I'll be speaking about this. I'll be speaking hopefully with clarity about why we must act now and what is it that we must now move to do to close these gaps, the gentrification gap, the wealth gap, the lending gap that comes from banks lending to whites, the foreclosure gap. So in every case, the gaps represent what it is that we are doing on the economic side. And let me tell you something. I want to make this point because I think it's a critical point to make. Black folks, we've spent so much time fighting on the social front that we have failed to recognize that our problem is social, but the solution is economics.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are seeking social solutions to social problem, we miss the point that the problem is social, but the solution is economics.
And empowering ourselves by believing in and trusting ourselves to invest within each other's community and businesses.
That is absolutely correct.
And we have
absolutely
not done
correct.
That. We are separated from ourselves. And unfortunately, that came with a lot of programming, but we must deprogram. Because we are in a position now where the Hispanics have superseded us as the new majority. So where does that leave us if we don't start acting together?
That is exactly correct.
And
that is exactly correct.
To come together, we need a big psychiatrist. I don't know how we can undo, but unless we start down that road, we will be lost. So it's critical, as you say, at this point.
That is absolutely correct, that is the reason why we are really making this call an appeal for everyone, why we must act now at the Riverside Church, and again, that will take place on Wednesday, that's Juneteenth, that this Wednesday, June 19th at Riverside Church. The Emancipation Rally starts at exactly 6:45 p.m. And we're inviting everyone to come. There'll be conversations around real immigration reform, how we move to stop the foreclosure and reverse the underwater mortgages, how we pursue a journey to economic justice, how do we really address the old concept of empowering the 99%. What do we do to create local jobs and indigenous jobs as opposed to crying to others to give us jobs and to provide jobs for us? We are clearly not a poor people. The gap between the buying power in America and the black buying power in America is only 5%.
Yes, indeed. I want to say also that folks, if you don't know where Riverside Baptist Church is, it's at 490 Riverside Drive in Harlem. And when does the whole event start? What time? You said 6 something, but does it start at noon or earlier?
It starts at noon. Everybody, coming out should try to come at 12 if you're coming. If you're coming for jobs, if you're coming with mortgage issue, the Situation Room opens at 12 o'clock. So we invite everyone to come out to the Situation Room. Those who are looking to start businesses, you want to talk to banks, you want to learn information about how to start your business, how to get loans, how to access resources, everyone should really make their way out to the Riverside Church at 12 noon for all of those activities. Those activities will go until about 5:30 p.m., and then we will get ready for the Emancipation Rally that starts at 6:45.
Well, this show has gone on longer than programmed, but those that want to hear the show can go to the archives and hear the entire show. And I want to thank you, Reverend Dennis Dillon, for coming on the show. It's been a very, very informative show, and I thank you so much for all you're doing for the community. And I suggest people, come on, he's telling you everything you need to know, so go. All right, and that's Wednesday, June 19th.
And I just want to salute you for your tremendous work. And just encourage you to keep up the good work, keep doing what you're doing. We encourage those who want to get in touch with us. Can I give the number and the
sure.
web address for them?
Definitely.
Okay, the phone number is 718-638-6397. We encourage you to pick up the phones and give us a call. Again, that number, 718-638-6397. And our website, freedom2013.com. That is freedom2013.com. We certainly want to ask you to connect. Let's do this together. The time for us to act is now. Thank you. You continue the tremendous work, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler, and we've been talking to Reverend Dennis Dillon. And I want to thank my listeners for making my topic topically yours. And by the way, Sunday is Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to all you dads out there.
Everything must change.
Everything must change.
Nothing stays the same. Everyone must change. No one stays the same. The young become the old. Mysteries do unfold.
You've been listening to the